My name is Macy. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for asking me to share my story, Beth. Oh, I like how I can just see myself. That's good. I'm not much of a like public speaker, but you know, I was taught when you get asked to do something, in AA, you do it. I would much rather hear other people's stories than share my own. But I will share my experience, strength, and hope tonight, and I hope someone gets something from it. So my sobriety date is November 19th, 2016. My DOC was alcohol and marijuana. So I'll just start with, you know, my childhood. I grew up in a really good household. My dad was, I grew up in Louisiana, a small town right outside of New Orleans, Mandeville, Louisiana. And my dad was a park manager. So we grew up in the state park there. I would always tell people, I have 2,400 acres in my backyard. I just loved it. And I really feel like it kind of shaped who I am today. But overall, it was a really good childhood. You know, my parents were great. They spent time with us. You know, I have two sisters. I'm the middle child. We were always outside playing games, playing sports. Sports were huge in my family. Me and my two sisters, you know, from age four, we started playing sports. Like I said, I was the middle child, so I was a little, and I don't, not all middle childs are like this, but I was definitely more of the argumentative one, more of the rebellious one. I say like my two sisters were like angels. I guess I was like the black sheep kind of. But I knew that my parents loved me, but I also felt different because I was the one that was always getting in trouble. So moving into like high school and junior high school. So me and my older sister, we're only 15 months apart. And we both were pretty heavy soccer players. For whatever reason, I would get compared to her like all the time. Not necessarily with our family, but with I would get bullied about it. Like people would say like, that must suck to be Rosalind's younger sister. You know, why is she so much prettier than you? Why is she better at soccer than you? So, you know, as a girl around that age hearing those things, it's hard. And I was good at soccer. I'll talk about it later, but she got more accolades than me. So I just always felt less than. And then I found alcohol. And I don't know, when I put that first drink in my mouth, like I immediately felt like I wasn't less than. You know, I felt like I could be whoever I wanted to be. It almost felt like a superpower kind of, like, you know, that less than mentality was gone. And I probably took it to the extreme because I felt like I could do whatever and be whatever, talk to whoever. It just gave me that extra courage that I was looking for. From the beginning, you know, I had my first drink in seventh grade. I love the effects of it. And all through high school, you know, I drank. I threw a huge party at my parents' house. Like, you know, that's the type of kid I was. I was a blackout drinker. I definitely had some incidents in high school that were like, oh, this is like, maybe you drink too much. You know, I seemed like I was definitely drinking, different than my other friends. I would always take it to the extreme. And then college came around and that's when it just got really bad. I I received a college scholarship to play soccer. And, yeah, I mean, it was soccer and partying, and that's all I did. But I really started to black out and do like these crazy things. Maybe someone can relate to this, but I like would become violent when I was drunk. I would get in like fights with my teammates. You know, I would be like the life of the party to like the disaster where like everybody would have to go home. And it was just embarrassing. And the next morning I would wake up like, you know, just knowing that that's not me, but then asking like, well, is that me? You know, and just like so ashamed and so like just felt awful. And, you know, the people I partied with were my teammates. So I would have to the next morning, like go to practice and face them. And it was just, there was just so much shame. And I had no answer for why I acted that way. I literally, and alcoholism never crossed my mind. I just knew that for whatever reason, when I drank way too much and I acted in very erratic, different ways. And I didn't understand it, but I kept drinking. And in college I got, a DWI, and that was my first experience with AA. The court told me to go to like, I think it was like 42 AA meetings. And I think I went to about 42 hours. I think I went to about 20 hours and like signed the forged the rest, you know, with like a signature. And I still remember like just going to those meetings, leaving and like getting fucked up, you know, like none of the information ever stuck with me. I guess I just wasn't ready or I don't know. But it is weird to look back and be like, what was I thinking? You know, I would hear, I didn't hear all this stuff, but, it didn't, you know, that didn't stop me. So after my first DWI and going to all those AA meetings, you know, I graduated college, thankfully, by the skin of my teeth. And I ended up moving to, go work at the Grand Canyon. Well, let me backtrack real quick. So 2 months before moving to the Grand Canyon, I got arrested. Don't remember it, but I just remember waking up in the jail, the drunk tank, and just like so hungover and just like, I can't keep doing this, you know, like no idea. I have no idea why I was there. You know, like I said, I was a blackout drinker, but just remember waking up and just, you know, that horrible feeling, you know? So that was my first time that I stopped drinking for a little bit. I think it was like 2 months, wasn't working a program or anything like that. But I decided, you know, we like to make big moves. And I decided to, that moving to the Grand Canyon would be a good idea. I was a server there. Like I said, I was 2 months sober the first day that I got there. I was drinking and smoking weed. And that's what I did the whole time there. And again, the people that work in the national parks, and I don't want to, you know, this isn't everyone, but it's a big party scene. You know, there's a lot of drinking, a lot of drugging. And I was still like, why do you drink this? Like, why do you drink so extreme? Like something was still off, you know, even with being around other people that are drugging and drinking. You know, I remember one time I like face planted into the concrete and all these people were just like really worried. They're like, I don't know how you're up walking right now. another incident, me and three other friends, we were driving back to the Grand Canyon, and we flipped the car, you know, we were drinking, smoking, we flipped the car several times, and yeah, we were all very lucky to be alive. I mean, I still think about that today, like just how lucky we were. So stuff like that, you know, it kept popping up. I've always had issues when I would get drunk. It was like an allergy, you know, my body, my mind just reacted very adversely to it. And I want to read something out of the doctor's opinion. And I still remember when I read this, I was just like, that's so me. And this could be for, you know, drugs or alcohol, but men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. You know, like I said, I loved the effect. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They're restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, and so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with the firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. And I mean, I just feel like in every way that describes my alcoholism. You know, I had so many times that were, that's a hard word to say, injurious, that were dangerous to myself and other people. And I just kept drinking, you know, and I had that remorse the next morning, and that didn't stop me. It truly was, you know, once I took that first sip, it was a phenomenon of craving. I don't know. And I just felt when I first read that, to read something that you can say, you know, that's me, because a lot of the times I didn't understand why these things would happen when I drank, or why when I took that first sip that I just wanted more and more and more until oblivion. So to finally read something that explained me was just very powerful. But anyway, so after the Grand Canyon, I didn't, I think I got sober. I moved home back to Louisiana. And I tried sobriety again. The Grand Canyon was just, it was a very low point. There was some great times, but it really put a magnifying glass in my alcoholism. And so I moved back home. I think I was sober for about 4 months. And my dad committed suicide. He had been really struggling with depression. And that is, you know, part of my story. But the reason I bring up my dad committing suicide is because I feel like something as tragic as that, if I wanted to stay sober bad enough, I could have. If I was working a program, you know, I've seen so many people go through very heartbreaking things and they're able to stay sober. So I did go back out, but I know that it was not because of my father's death. It was just because I was not ready to give up alcohol. So yeah, I was back out drinking a while, and you know, once you stop and you go back, it gets worse. And it did. The blackouts were more frequent. The hangovers were just awful. I would have like serious panic attacks. It was just, it was hell. But for whatever reason, I couldn't stop. And yeah, it just, you know, and, just a very low point in my life. And I mean, I didn't really know how to stop. I remember like telling myself that, like, I'm going to need something. Something's going to have to happen for me to like wake up and realize, like, do something different, you know? So yeah, that's what happened. And I still, like, towards the end of my drinking, I felt God telling me, like, you know, this, you either got to stop now or this is going to be really bad. So one night I got into an accident. It involved a hot tub, the cut in the side of it, which is concrete. And I broke all my front teeth. And for whatever reason, like, that night I was just done. Well, the next morning, you know, I just remember the whole day, like, praying to God to please take this, obsession from me, you know, to relieve me of this alcoholism. And I haven't had a drink since. So like a week later, I went back into the rooms of AA, which I'm thankful now for that DWI, because I knew what AA was and I knew that it was there. And I got a sponsor right away, you know. We started to work the steps, which I highly recommend. You know, those were life-changing. Yeah, so we worked the steps, and 6 months later I ended up smoking marijuana. So I changed my sobriety date to November 19th, 2016. And since then, it's, you know, it hasn't been easy, but it's been a heck of a ride, and it's been beautiful and hard and everything at the same time. Just to touch on like maintenance for like my emotional sobriety. You know, when I came in, I heard a lot about like our disease centers in our mind. And I didn't really understand that, you know, because alcohol was my problem. But I've learned that, no, like, you know, it's our thinking. This is stuff that I have to do daily. This last year was a pretty tough one. I was, I guess, dabbling in gray area. And I'm very lucky that I got out. You know, I worked with a sponsor. I worked with my sponsor. So everything's good now, but it was scary. And it could have gone really bad. You know, I think this year has been tough for everyone. I believe, you know, to being under a care of a doctor, you know, for like mental health stuff. And also, you know, in AA, like, I'm of a total proponent of that. And when my mental health got bad, I found a psychiatrist, and, I think that's when you can do those things hand in hand, then I think there can be results, good results. So things that have helped me to stay sober, I think having a fellowship is huge. You know, I go to a women's meeting. It kind of stinks, you know, with COVID, everything's kind of different now. But when I moved to Austin, I was like a year sober. I moved to Austin and I found a fellowship of ladies. And that has been super helpful. We go do fun things together. You know, we can go to concerts, we can go dancing, and have a blast. So fellowship is huge. Also, you know, having a sponsor. I talk to my sponsor once a week, which probably isn't enough, but knowing your sponsor, having a relationship with your sponsor, is crucial. And telling your sponsor what's going on, you know, I'll call her and just run something by her and it helps so much. And you know, a big thing, one for me this year was, connecting with my higher power. I've been saying the third step prayer, seventh step prayer, and ninth step prayer every day for like the last 3 months. And it's just, you know, giving over that control, whatever your higher power is, you know, it doesn't just find something, as long as it's not yourself, and knowing that you're not in control. You know, we as alcoholics, we like to be in control. And it's something I have to do every day is to give God, to let God know, you know, you're in control. Like I even say like, you're my director. I'm your actor. You know, you're running this show. It's something I have to do daily. So some things with that have really been like amazing, through the program and through sobriety. I was able to get my dream job in sobriety. You know, I tried and tried during when I was in active addiction and it never happened. But once I got sober, it happened. And it's amazing, you know, I'm an adaptive PE teacher. And that's been my dream job forever. And for it to actually come true, it's really cool to see, you know, and I have no doubt that it's because I'm sober. You know, I'm in a relationship today, a healthy relationship, which is not something that I'm used to. Every relationship I've been in, even friendships, you know, there always have been some kind of drama, you know, something I'm not getting, causing, you know, arguments and just, you know, self-pity always. But yeah, the relationship I'm in today is, I mean, obviously it's not perfect, but I really do believe that I'm able to have this relationship from working this program. You know, I communicate my needs. And yeah, it's really cool. It took me a while to be like, okay, this is a healthy relationship. I didn't really know how to take it. Cause I'm used to like just up and down. But now that I've like settled in, it's really nice. And you know, another thing too is just being able to show up for my family, family and friends, you know, being that person that, is a strong foundation for people. You know, I was the one that would cause turmoil in my family when we would go on trips or just in general. But now I'm more of like the peacemaker, which is really cool to see. Yeah, I feel like I'm gonna like end early, but yeah, another thing too, like just being like an adult, you know, like, it's not always fun, but just taking care of what you need to take care of. I was like in addiction, you know, my room was always a mess. I took care of stuff last minute. But today I wake up, I make my bed. Some days I'm like, who is this person? But, yeah, I mean, it took me 4 years, but I probably would have never done it if I was still in addiction, but I took care of like my license, got my Texas license plate, got my, Texas driver's license, you know, just like taking care of the things that you need to take care of and not putting them off. And that's been really cool too. And just doing the next right thing. I have seen that if you do the next right thing, good things will happen. Or it'll work out the way that it's supposed to work out. So that's what I just try to tell myself that, you know, I'd say just, if you don't have a higher power, find one, you know, get into the big book. That was helpful for me. You know, I've never read something that I related with so much, which was super helpful because I thought I was like just some like horrible person, you know? And it was awesome to read who I am or like what I was, you know? So I think that's all I'm going to say. Sorry for ending early. Thanks.
Thank you, Maggie.
Woo.
Thank you, Maggie.
That was awesome.
That was good. Thank you.
Oh, sweet. Thank you.